Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
We hope you enjoyed listening to this Anfield Index show. Please be sure to subscribe to our channel so future podcasts find their way to your device automatically. There's nothing quite like fan engagement, and we'd love to know what you think of anything discussed on this show. The best way to get in touch is over on our free Discord community, where both podcasters and listeners debate the hottest LFC topics 24/7. Sign up free now at anfieldindex.com/Discord. You won't regret it. You can also follow us on Twitter at Anfield Index and find us on Facebook by searching for Anfield Index. Oh, and before you go, we'd love it if you could leave us a 5-star review on your favourite podcast app. It only takes a couple of seconds, and it means the world to the people who create these free shows.
Hello and welcome to AI Scouted on Anfield Index Pro. I'm Dave Hendrick, joined as always by Mr. Carl Matchett. How are you, sir?
I'm good, but I think we should check the recording is on before we continue.
That's a good point. Guy, is the recorder on? Because we don't want another lost pod.
You weren't even there for the lost pod. It's your fault.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, definitely my fault. Right, we are here today in advance of Liverpool versus Sparta Prague, which is tomorrow. We are here to discuss Liverpool versus Manchester United on Sunday. So if a player gets injured or something happens against Sparta and this therefore becomes a little bit meaningless, that's not actually our fault. It's Carl's fault, not my fault. But Carl Matchett, Liverpool versus Manchester United in the FA Cup. I'm quite excited, I have to say. I was in favour of potentially binning off the FA Cup and trying to focus on, you know, the league and the Europa League. But once we drew Manchester United, I was sucked back in.
Such a tie can do that to you. I mean, it's a little bit odd, isn't it? Because, like, we can be excited that it's a big game and it's, you know, we win this one, we go back to Wembley again and so on and so forth. And yet, the games against Man United, we've spoken about it before, we kind of underperform ourselves for some odd reason. One too many times or five too many times. So I am hopeful that obviously we'll play as well as we can do. And I am hopeful that Man United will continue to play exactly as they have done for most of eternity, seemingly. Mm. But this, it's United, and there's still that little sneaking kind of suspicion that it won't go that way.
Yeah, I mean, look, we've seen Liverpool put United to the sword many times over the last few years. Obviously, the 7-0 last season was absolutely fantastic, but there have been just, you know, the title-winning season. We went to Old Trafford, they were garbage, and we couldn't beat them. This season, we played them at Anfield, they're garbage, and we couldn't beat them. And it is almost like last season going into that game, none of us were hugely confident because we weren't playing well and had quite a few injuries. and a bit of a patchwork midfield, and yet we absolutely wipe the floor with them. Other times we go in close to full strength, and maybe we're a little bit too confident, and things don't go our way. We obviously will play them again in the league at their place in a couple of weeks after the international break. But I would you, if someone said to you, right, you're going to lose this game, but it guarantees you a win in the other game, would you, because like I'm just thinking when we played Arsenal in the FA Cup, we beat them, went back there a couple of weeks later in the league and lost. Would you take the flip of that, losing this game, but going on and beating them in the league?
I suppose I would, because obviously the league has to be the priority here. That would just be silly otherwise. But I would be quite begrudging about it, to be honest. I would feel we should be able to beat them twice in quick succession at their place, and that's just how it is. And
yeah,
probably we won't. That is my feeling. Probably we won't beat them twice. So I would take the league win if I have to choose between them.
Yeah. They have lost 16 games this season, Carl. 11 in the league, 1 in the EFL Cup, spanked by Newcastle at home, and 4 in a Champions League group that contained a mediocre Bayern, Copenhagen, and a Galatasaray side that went out of the Europa League to the Sparta side we beat 5-1 last week. So they're not a good team. Like, I know they're 6th in the league, but they're not a good team. They're 6th in the league because the league isn't all that strong outside of the top few teams. They're just the best of the kind of mediocre to bad teams. And they're 6 points behind Spurs, who've got a game in hand, 8 behind Villa, and then miles behind ourselves, Arsenal, and City. Their form is... it's the definition of inconsistent. Win one, lose one. Win one, lose two. Win one, lose one. Win two, lose one. Win three, lose one. You know, they never seem to be able to string a long run of wins together. Their longest this season, they managed 4 league games in a row from the 1st of February to the 18th of February, during which time they played in no other competitions. So it was just a 4-game winning run. They beat Wolves 4-3 and were very, very fortunate to get a last-minute winner. They hammered West Ham 3-0, but it wasn't a 3-0 game. Like, 3-2 probably would have been a fairer reflection. They went to Villa and beat them 2-1. It was a good result, but not a great performance. And then they beat Luton 2-1, where they went 2-0 up, and then Luton flogged them for the remainder of the game. Then they lose at home to Fulham. They lose to City, which everybody expected, but they beat Everton at the weekend. Again, it wasn't a good performance. They got 2 penalties in the first half, and aside from that, didn't really create anything. Like, they're not a good team. They have some good players, and I think there's real potential in a front four of Garnacho, Bruno, and Rashford behind Højlund. I think Manu looks really promising in midfield. Outside of that, and maybe Diogo Dalo as a backup fullback, I don't think I'd want anyone else that they have.
I mean, I think that's even stretching the amount.
Oh, I'm not saying I'd take all of them. I'm saying, like, you know, I could see Garnacho functioning well in our squad as a squad player. I would take Marcus Rashford without question. I still think he's a tremendous footballer. Højlund to be a good backup for Darwin. Bruno doesn't really fit anymore. And given we have Dom, we have absolutely no need for him. But I do like Bruno as a player. I think he's a bit of a twat now, but he's still a very good player. And Kobbie Mainoo, I would have interest in us getting. But again, he'd be a squad player. He wouldn't be starting for us.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. There's always like a few who would be in and around, I suppose. And even just by the nature of that team being constructed differently, they would have traits that some of our players don't have. Some characteristics which maybe we would miss. Like, even up until this season, I probably would have taken Scott McTominay at Liverpool, because we didn't really have anyone who from central midfield was capable of really breaking into the box, was quite strong aerially, was a really, really athletic, sort of prime age athleticism player who could go box to box. We used to, but we didn't. But we do now, obviously. So, yeah, but I think it's fine to say that they have players who would work well for us or be in our squad. Some of them might even be first choice for some people. And no doubt we will see in the lead up to the game a few, should we say, combined 11s, which have more United players than Liverpool players for certain.
Of course we will.
Ultimately, just opinions. Some of them quite weird opinions, admittedly. But they do have enough talent and enough individuals there who have been able to get a result for them now and then whenever they've needed them, especially. I would say, though, the other thing is, like you mentioned, the form and the fact they've been unable to string impressive runs together and all that. It was not that long ago they were talking about their home form being really good, and like that they'd only lost to Man City in the league in like a little bit of a run in any meaningful matches. They've actually only ever won this season two games in a row at home.
Yeah,
that's their best stretch. Twice at the beginning of the season, twice in October, twice November, December. That's it. Like they haven't even won back-to-back home matches in 2024 yet. It's I don't really understand the sort of narrative that seemed to develop maybe about, I'm not sure, maybe 2 months ago, something like that, that said that they were turning their home form around, you know, and then they'd lost to, was it Bournemouth and maybe Bayern in the Champions League, something like that, and then suddenly they were turning things around. But then
I assume it was built off of last season.
Since then as well. So it's not a, no idea. I mean, it certainly hasn't been good, let's put it that way. They've only drawn one at home this season, and I think they must have lost very nearly as many as they've won at Old Trafford.
So last season they lost to Brighton at home on the opening day, and then didn't lose at home in the league again all season long. And I assume that's where this idea came from, that their home form was great. This season, they've lost at home to Brighton, Crystal Palace, Manchester City, Bournemouth, and Fulham, just in the league. They also lost at home to Newcastle in the EFL Cup. They lost at home to Galatasaray and Bayern in the Champions League. Like, their home form has not been at all good this season. But again, like you said, that kind of narrative exists that they're good at home, but they just haven't been this season. They haven't been good home or away this year. They've just been poor everywhere. If you look at like their goal difference on the season is only positive because of this FA Cup run. They're plus two across all competitions in terms of goal difference. And it's because of the FA Cup, where they played Wigan Athletic and Newport County in the first two rounds. And even Newport gave them trouble. They're just not a good team. They don't score enough goals, despite all the investment in the attack. And they concede too many, despite all the investment in the defence and the fact that they play largely a negative brand of football and try and hit teams on the counter-attack using Garnacho, using Højlund, and using Rashford, which has its merits. And I would absolutely say that is definitely a legitimate way to play if you are rock solid defensively and have that threat of those three on the counter-attack. I would say lean all the way into it, but the fact is they're not rock solid defensively.
No, they haven't been any kind of solid whatsoever, to be perfectly honest. Even on the winning run that they had, they were conceding a lot of goals. Like, they kept a clean sheet against West Ham, but Newport, Wolves scored three against them. Spurs got a 2-2 draw. Villa, Luton, they all scored against United. They were not solid in the slightest. There was another, I think it was a comment piece a couple of weeks ago, maybe only a week and a bit ago. I'm not sure if it was after the Nottingham Forest match or something, that said that Casemiro's most recent return has made them a bit, you know, more solid again, more able to withstand threats, a bit more structure. Varane had come back into the team and had a couple of decent games. But, I mean, even since then, like, City put three past them they didn't look solid at all against Nottingham Forest. How Nottingham Forest didn't get on the score sheet, let alone get a result, of no idea at all in that game. The Everton game, just trying to think, I did watch that game and I can't even remember. It was so dull for most of it. I don't think Everton created a whole lot, did they? But it's Everton. They don't create a whole lot. So fair enough. They got the clean sheet there. I would expect us to give them a lot more trouble than a lot of the teams who have even scored two or three against them have managed to do so.
They've kept clean sheets in 7 Premier League games, 11 games in all competitions, but they failed to score in 9 games in all competitions, including 7 in the, sorry, 6 in the, no, 7 in the Premier League. 7 in the Premier League, 1 in the Champions League, 1 in the League Cup. So in the Premier League, 7 clean sheets, 7 games without scoring. That's not the balance you want to have. And when you look at the clean sheets, like Wolves at home on the opening day, they got away with absolute murder. Wolves missed a ton of chances and the goalkeeper got away with an assault on Kalajdzic. They kept a clean sheet against Burnley. Well, congrats on that one. Against Fulham, against Luton, against Everton, against West Ham and against Everton. Again, the only one you'd look at there and say, well, that's a good clean sheet, is West Ham. And then they've kept clean sheets against Wigan and Forest in the FA Cup, Crystal Palace in the EFL Cup, and Copenhagen in the Champions League. Again, I would say West Ham is the only game I would look at and say, congrats on that one. Because other than that, they're teams you should be keeping clean sheets against when you've invested as much money in a goalkeeper, in your defenders, and in a £70 million holding midfielder. There's when we've talked about this before, like we're almost 2 full seasons now into the Ten Hag era. And there's no discernible style of play. There's no defensive structure. When you watch them attack, there's no like defined patterns to how they attack. There's nothing that's like an automation that you feel like these players have worked on and drilled and committed to memory and can do automatically. There's nothing like that. So you would have to question how it is that this man has been at the club for this long and yet not in any phase of play does there look to be his imprint on the team, despite the fact he spent over £400 million and had nearly 2 full years in charge?
I don't need a VPN. I've got nothing to hide. This is what I used to tell myself before I hooked up with LibertyShield.com. Not only is my home internet now fully encrypted, but I can now access all the websites I want, whenever I want, and do so from absolutely anywhere. As a Liverpool fan, I love to know I can now watch every match, regardless of whether it's on UK TV or not. My Liberty Shield VPN makes sure nothing is blocked and guarantees me super fast streaming speed throughout that match. You can get connected right now with their software package, which includes a 48-hour no-obligation free trial and instant access to their apps for Apple, Android, Fire TV, PC, Mac, and Android TV. Or go a step further like I have and get one of their pre-configured VPN routers. These small but powerful devices allow you to easily connect every device in your home to VPN, making it the perfect solution for smart TVs, Mac boxes, and games consoles. Visit LibertyShield.com today and use coupon code AIVPN25 to get 25% off at checkout.
No, there hasn't been. I think the even more than the attacking style, let's say, or lack thereof, I think it's the defensive, the lack of organisation, the lack of resilience that they have in the team, which is really the most damning thing about what he hasn't done so far. You know, whether you have the right players to play your way or not, you have players and therefore you should be making a structure. That's how football usually works. When new managers take over, they put the foundations in place first for what they want and then they add the playing style a bit later on. Not everybody does it like that, but usually that would be the case. And certainly if you're in a team which bleeds goals, isn't winning as many matches and all the rest of it, that's how you have to improve. You have to stop losing games before you can really start winning them, right? Man United's last three matches against, let's say, non-top teams: Fulham, which was at home and they lost; Nottingham Forest, which was away and they won 1-0, and the Everton match as well, which they won 2-0 at home. Everton, Forest, and Fulham, not great sides, let's be honest, not this season. How many shots do you think they conceded in total? Three matches.
In total. Shots, not shots on target.
Just shots.
40.
56.
Jesus Christ.
56 shots in three games against very, very average teams.
How many did Everton have?
Everton actually had like 23 shots.
I watched that game. Genuinely. I watched that game. I couldn't tell you of one save that Onana made in that game.
Yeah.
I remember one save that Pickford made from a free kick from Bruno, which was a good save.
It was decent, yeah. Everton actually had six shots on target in that game.
Do you know, like, that's it's the how are you giving up that many shots? I did them a disservice. The other good clean sheet was at Anfield. That was a clean sheet based solely on the fact that we were shit and, despite thousands of shots, couldn't find a goal. It wasn't down to anything they did, it was down to us. I remember seeing Carragher, I think, saying that in terms of shots conceded and the like, they were second only to Sheffield United this season. And Sheffield United are historically right now on course to be the worst defensive team in the history of the Premier League. And United are, like, that's the company that they're keeping. Hello, I'm here to annoy you. I'm here to annoy you into listening to more of me and more of others on EPL Index. We don't just have the Anfield Index stuff. We've got EPL Index as well, which covers the entirety of the Premier League. And we have three podcasts and a whole bunch of really good writing on EPLindex.com. The podcasts are my own two-footed podcast, which is every day at 4 p.m., Monday through Friday, covering the whole league. We have A Tad Predictable, hosted by Tadiwa. You know Tadiwa, he does Anfield Index. He presents A Tad Predictable before every Premier League match week. And then Kevin DeVries and his crew on the EPL Roundtable, they're every week after the Premier League match week. So make sure you listen to everything we're doing on EPL Index and follow us there on Twitter at EPL Index. Thank you. Bye-bye. Is that Sheffield United team?
Well, they have improved since then. They're now ahead of Sheffield United and Luton. So
they've got then, better. I mean, things are trending in the right direction. Give the man a new deal.
Yeah. They're actually third worst at home as well. Sheffield United and West Ham are the only teams who concede more shots than United on home soil. Away from home, it's literally just Luton. That's it.
That's appalling.
And like the games which I picked out there, I obviously skipped the Man City one because I didn't want to skew it by putting them in with one of the best teams around, obviously. But if you do include that, then across the last four games, they've conceded 83 shots. 83 shots.
83 shots. That's basically 21 shots a game, just under 21 shots a game that they're allowing. If they allow us 21 shots on Sunday, I think we're going to score a few goals. I know we had, was it 30-something shots we had at Anfield in the draw in December?
I'll have a look. I mean, that's an average of a shot every 4 minutes, 20 seconds, something like that.
But that's four shocking. 20,
one every 4 minutes.
That is appalling.
That's abysmal. Against, like I said, average teams. And like the Man City one, yeah, that's the highest of the lot. But it's not like extravagantly more. I think they had 27 or 28 shots to Everton's 23. So it's not like it was wildly different. We had 34 shots against United.
Yeah. Do you know, how many were on target, can you see?
Eight.
Like that's just us not doing well.
Yeah.
But like, It's a funny thing because United's fan base are split on this manager now. There are those who want to give him more time, those that believe you should, you know, see through the process or whatever, the project. And there's those that think, look, you know, it's not working. We need to make a change. One way I always think to judge a manager is, do the opposition fans, do your rival fans want him to stay or go? And I think all Liverpool fans would love for Ten Hag to stay there long term, as would all City fans and Arsenal fans and Chelsea fans, which should tell United fans that this guy is not someone anyone sees as a threat. But you do hear United fans say, oh, well, look at Arteta's first couple of years, where he took over mid-season, he did win the FA Cup, but he finished eighth, and then he finished eighth the next year. And then he finished fifth. And obviously, Ten Hag won a cup and got top four last year, so he is ahead of where Arteta was in terms of success. But when you were 18, 19, 20 months into Arteta's tenure at Arsenal, you could see a definitive style of play forming. You could see the basic principles of what the team was going to be being implemented. Now, obviously, a lot of it was, you know, what Manchester City do, because that's where he'd learned under Pep. But you could see him at least putting his imprint on the team. But again, I go back to the fact that we're, you know, 10 league games and this will be their last cup game. So that's 11 games from the end of Manchester United's season. And there's nothing about this team that looks like an Erik ten Hag team based on what we saw of him at Ajax. He came in, they got beaten at home by Brighton. Then they went to Brentford. They were getting absolutely demolished. I think it was 4-0 at half time. And he reverted back to this deep block counter-attacking style, which is what Ollie had done. And he spent a fortune, because after that game, I think Casemiro arrived. And then obviously they brought in Anthony and they brought in whoever it was they brought, you know, whoever they brought in for this season, Onana and the rest. So he spent a lot of money and he's never ever gone back to what he looked to implement when he first arrived. And he has routinely said, I don't have the players to do it. I'm sorry, but like, when you walk into a club and you buy Malacia, Eriksen, Lisandro Martinez, Casemiro, Anthony, Mason Mount, Andre Onana, and Rasmus Højlund, you've bought two-thirds of a team. You've done that. Nobody else has done it. You've done that. So if you've got two-thirds of a team that you've bought, all of them, bar Eriksen and Malacia, were big money. Casemiro was 70 million, Lissandra was 55, Anthony was 80, Mount was 60, Onana was 50, and Højlund was 80. When you've spent that much money on, that's over half a team, plus, like I said, you add in Christian Eriksen, they're seven of a starting 11. When you've spent all that money and brought in that many players, surely to God, there were four players there to begin with that you could say, because like nobody can tell me Rafa Varane couldn't play a high-line possession-based football. No one can tell me Luke Shaw couldn't play a high-line possession-based football. No one can tell me Rashford and Bruno and Garnacho and Kobbie Mainoo couldn't play the style of football that Ajax were playing. No one can tell me that. Diogo Dalot was another one that could fit into that. So I don't understand how it is that he can still be making these excuses. It seems like he's almost fearful to go back to what got him the job in the first place because he's worried that, you know, they'll get thrashed again. Maybe that the players that he's bought aren't good enough. And then he comes out with the most bizarre injuries or the most bizarre excuses about injuries. Nobody could deal with this many injuries. We've had more injuries than them this year. So have a bunch of other clubs. Everybody's dealing with injuries. Everybody, even Arsenal, who've been very lucky with their starting 11, they've still had injuries. And it's not like United are missing a raft of players, a raft of starters. Like, you've got your players, you've spent all this money, you've brought in all these players to play a certain way, and then you don't play that way. I don't understand why you would buy Onana to play a high line, which requires a sweeper keeper, to play out from the back, which requires a keeper that can pass, and then use him like he's David De Gea.
Especially when you could have got De Gea still on a free after you let him go.
But De Gea had agreed a new deal, and then they binned him off. Could have saved $55 million and bought someone good.
I mean, I've said before, I think United did need to move on from De Gea just to almost close the, close the era, if you like, and sort of move on in terms of squad culture and all the rest of it. I think that's fine to do if that's your aim. Not just De Gea, but there was a whole group of players around that time, let's say. And I think that was okay to do. But the wider point absolutely remains. He's got players there. He's got players there to do what he wants to do. He's not using them, or he's not getting out of them what he wanted to do. I think he's been woeful in terms of his squad development here. I think he's been really, really poor in terms of bringing on any kind of combinations or any kind of partnerships in the team or anything at all. Like, yeah, sure, the in centre back especially, I think that they have had issues in terms of like trying to change people around and all that, but you've still had time before these injuries are happening to get a club culture and a way of playing in place, an on-pitch culture I'm talking about now, to get in so that when people come into the team, when they're playing in slightly different positions, people know what runs are being made, people know what movements are being made, where the build-up play has started to be structured from and all the rest of it. They don't have that. And that's why they've struggled. You know, when you had to put Luke Shaw into centre-back, when Johnny Evans has had to come in and play 25 matches this season after only meant to be training with you initially in summer, these things mean that when they play well, the individuals are doing it, but they've been unable to do it every single game because the team structure isn't there.
Yeah, and like, I get they've had the injuries at centre-back, and obviously Martinez has missed quite a bit of time, but I haven't checked it recently, but I know up until about 2 months ago, their results without Martinez were actually better than the results with Martinez since he'd arrived at the club. And, I mean, you only need to look at what's gone on with the captaincy at that club under this manager, where he walked in and Maguire was captain. And I'm not a fan of Harry Maguire, the player, at all. I think he has his merits in a mid-table team. You know, like a good version of Everton. A West Ham should have a Harry Maguire-style centre-back. But the way he treated Maguire around that captaincy issue, I thought was very poor. I thought he gave Cristiano Ronaldo far too much rope before eventually making the right decision and binning him off. But to give the captaincy to Bruno Fernandes, who, he has great attributes as a player. He does not have great attributes in terms of his personality on the pitch. I don't know what he's like off the pitch, but on the pitch, he's constantly crying. He's constantly diving. He's constantly faking injury. And I just don't see how he, who has quit on your team in multiple games, we all remember what happened at Anfield last season, where he basically just went and stood by the touchline and gave up with about 15 minutes to go. I don't know how that can be the man that represents your club as captain. I really don't. And then you tried to force Maguire out the door in the summer. You tried to push him to go to West Ham, which I think would have been a decent move for him, not necessarily for West Ham, but for him anyway. And when he didn't go, all of a sudden, he's the next best thing and you're bringing him back in. Last season, Harry Maguire played 8 games in the league for Manchester United as a starter and came off the bench in 8 more. Like, you made it clear to him, the club captain, that you had no interest in having him in the team. Even when Martinez wasn't playing, you were playing Lindelof over him. So when he comes in and he doesn't play well, or he doesn't look as locked in, or his training's not as good and he picks up a knock, it's because of how you treated him last year that you're having an issue with him this year.
Hey guys, it's Eddie Gibbs from Anfield Index here. I hope you're enjoying this podcast, and I'm sorry to call time on the show before it ends. In the current climate, it's tougher than ever before to offer podcasts for free. At Anfield Index, we produce over 75 free shows every month, which I'm confident is unparalleled in the LFC sphere. Whilst we'd love to offer everything for free, the production costs now make this impossible. That said, we don't want to follow the model of other channels and lock all of our content behind a paywall. So what we've decided to do is to continue offering every show for free, but cut that offering to 30 minutes on our longer shows. So to get all of our shows in full and enjoy the best of everything we have to offer, we really hope you'll consider supporting the channel and signing up at anfieldindexpro.com. For about the price of one cup of coffee, you'll get every podcast in full with zero ads. You'll also get access to our LFC VIP community, where you can enjoy live podcasts, engage with our podcasters, and chat with other Reds in real time. So that website again, anfieldindexpro.com. Join today.
Sports Social Podcast Network.